to Day 4 of Radio Free Nintendo E3 2008 Edition, starring your intrepid host, Jonathan Batts, your intrepid director, Stephen Windyman Rodriguez, and your intrepid news editor, Carmine Red.
Thank you.
We're intrepid.
Energy Dang Squad. Wind and for girls in that, a good way.
That game has been vetoed.
I'm done.
That game has been embargoed from this podcast. We signed an NDA that we will never, ever, 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 ever be allowed to talk about that game.
We're going to edit that out. Not really. Actually, I could. I have the waveform right in front of me.
Let's not. Actually, we are speaking to you from the beautiful USC campus. Go Bruins. And this is the closest quiet place we can find after E3 is over. And my point being, E3 is now over. We're waiting for the festivities to begin at the end of the show, as they always do for our crew. And we just wanted to get in one last podcast before we go our separate ways tomorrow and after checking out the Dark Knight.
After you guys get pasted tonight, is what you're saying, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm going to be in no condition to do a podcast after the next few hours. So I'm not really in condition now, to tell you the truth. But we are here to wrap up this special series of RFN. And we wanted to do it by talking about the third-party games. Yesterday we gave our impressions of the first-party stuff, and some of those games I couldn't talk about. I could today, but we're not going to. We're gonna focus on the third-party stuff that we played throughout the week and give you guys an idea of what to look forward to this holiday season from all the third parties, because my guess is most of you won't be buying a lot of Nintendo games for the rest of the year.
Nope.
So,
which is as it should be.
Yeah. So
buy third-party games.
That's right. Well, for once, I agree with you, Chiron. So we're going to go through our favorite third-party games. Most of these we got to play. A couple of them were not technically hands-on or were barely hands-on. But these are at least the games we saw up close, got to talk to people about, got to see them demoed. These are not things we just saw a trailer on at some press conference. So I think we want to start with Mega Man 9.
Yes.
And I barely played this, so you guys would be better talking about it than me.
It's Mega Man, as I said in my blog, the way it should be.
I'd say it's more like Mega Man 3.5 than Mega Man 9. But, I mean, if you want to place it in the series, because there is some progression through the NES games. Very little.
They've actually changed it up. I mean, the formula. You know, people are like, oh, I don't like the Mega Buster. Well, it's going to be in there, but not quite going to be in there. Because what turns out what's happening here is Mega Man is stripped of all his powers. All he has is his regular gun.
Taking a Metroid approach to it.
Yeah, so apparently there are the two demo levels they had. There were places where you could slide to get items, but you couldn't slide. So it's either that I highly doubt they would just take out the slide functionality for the demo, but more than likely it's that you get to slide functionality ability somewhere in the game.
Right.
That would seem like, and I would imagine also that's also where you get your Mega Buster.
Or maybe they're doing Morph Ball.
They're going to have the Mega Buster. Didn't they say that they aren't going to have it?
They did not confirm either way. The person at the demo didn't seem to really know a whole lot about it.
The theory I'm working with at the moment is that there's this weird new pickup. You might have seen it, Kai, that it kind of looks like an eyeball, they come in big and small varieties, and you collect them, you have like a number of them in your inventory subscreen. I think they're going to limit the Mega Buster use, just like any of the other special weapons.
Interesting.
And you have to, this is just speculation on my part based on, you know, me being an awesome Mega Man guy. But I think that you only have an X amount of Mega Buster users are so much charge time.
Well, this is getting a little bit too detailed for this particular episode, but
I'm just telling how
what
I saw it.
What
it's
I really
awesome.
Liked was seeing some of the new level designs, some old enemies as well as some really cool new enemies. They look like the elephants throw the big pink ball,
and those
totally could have been in any of the original Mega Man games, but they weren't. They're new, but they look old. And that's a pretty cool thing. I mean, that's
right
kind of
in.
What the whole game is about. But I think we all agreed that the main thing that we got out of the demo was that game's fucking hard. Like, I would say maybe even a little harder than the original.
I'm not going to beat that game. I'm going to buy it. I'm not going to beat it.
One of the demo levels had the old backing blocks. And I hate them. I liken them to the dog in Duck Hunt. And that if you die, they just keep going.
Right, they taunt you after you're dead.
They taunt you after you're dead.
That's true.
And you will get that
They're
a lot.
They're not that hard if you don't suck.
Yeah, like, if you're completely new to an Eggman type of game, they will tear you doing, but well, I just had to get used to that.
Unfortunately, the E3 demo was pretty short. It was only two levels.
And no bosses at the end either.
No bosses. They weren't really saying anything about the bosses, even though the lineup has been announced. So, anyway, I was surprised at how little there was, considering the game seems pretty far along from the trailer. I mean, I'm guessing that it's going to come out pretty soon.
Yeah, but you don't want to show off too much of that game, because it is the entire game. Like, they basically showed us, like, 20% of the game, almost.
I guess you could say that. Not that we actually completed those levels. They were really, really, really hard.
Yeah, I thought they
were about as difficult as, like, Dr. Wily levels. But these were the boss levels, you know, at the beginning.
No, not that hard.
I thought they were on that order.
They were Mega Man challenging.
Yeah.
I've went through some hard regular
levels. For me, the progression of most Mega Man games is I try all the levels until I find one that's just barely beatable. You know, I find the easiest. None of them are usually easy, but I find the easiest level, get to the boss, kill the boss, get his weapon, and then I trial and error it again until I find whichever level or whichever boss is weak to that weapon, and then I kind of, you know, gradually go through the whole thing.
And I'm sure this game will be like that, too.
That's kind of the... Yeah, I think they're pretty much designed that
way. I think that they literally made Mega Man 9 for older people to Mega Man, because they just, you know, let's up the difficulty, see if they can do it, you know, in this day and age.
Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons I'm really happy for it.
Maybe there should be a training level to get you re-acclimated to the old school game.
Mega Man 1 and 2 coming to Virtual Console.
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, the next game on our list is Prince of Persia DS. Now, we saw this today, and, pause.
Hey, Billy.
So, you know, this game came out, the first screenshot of it came out a couple weeks ago, and on this very show, James Jones spent about 10 minutes disparaging the one screenshot that they released, and I have to say, we saw it running today. We actually saw the demo running and on a real DS, and
it looks
pretty damn good. I think they just took, like, the worst screenshot ever. In fact, we mentioned it to the developer who was showing it off, and he just kind of shook his head. He was like, I know, that was the worst screenshot. I can't believe they released that. So I think once everybody sees a few more screenshots and is able to put things in context,
especially the video,
the animation is good. Basically what they're doing is, it has this kind of Phantom Hourglass kind of art style. I mean, that's kind of what the color palette looks like. It has a soft polygon look for the backgrounds. It's a 2D platformer, basically. So it's like 2.5D. You got 3D graphics like New Super Mario Brothers. Like, although the characters themselves are hand-drawn sprites, not polygons, but everything else is polygons. And it's really good, actually. I thought the gameplay looked really tight and very fluid. And
I thought it was, even because it's 2D, it even harkens back to the very old, very classic Prince of Persia.
Yeah, but I think it's a lot faster.
Oh, it is a lot faster. You've still got the other character, the support character, and still very acrobatic, lots of wall jumping.
Yeah, the support character is sort of linked to the way they're doing the next-gen console games, although it's a different character. But I think it's the same philosophy, where you have the support character who follows you and helps you, doesn't get in the way, ties into the story, helps you do things that the prince couldn't do on his own. So, anyway, you know, we didn't really get to do hands-on with that. We watched the developer play it for a few minutes, but it looked pretty good, and I just wanted to bring it up because I wasn't on that episode, but some people spent quite a bit of time making fun of that game, and having seen much more of it now, it actually looks really promising. It looks like a lot of fun. It's an action game, but the entire game is controlled with the stylus, and I haven't seen anything quite like that. I mean, a 2D side-scrolling platform game controlled entirely with stylus. It's pretty interesting the way they did it.
That must be new. I can't think of anything
else. I can't think of anything else. So, I'm actually looking forward to seeing that again. From EA's booth on the first day of the show, Kai and I both saw Facebreaker KO Party. Do you want to talk about this a little bit?
Well, Facebreaker, some people have compared it to Street Fighter, and it does sort of feel like a fighting game. I know when you look at it, you've got one character, another character.
I mean, my first thought was Punch-Out. Doesn't really play like Punch-Out.
Really
it's more
like
from
it.
The side, mm-hmm. And it's a little more in-depth than Punch-Out. It's not as puzzle-based.
Although, you do have to take care of where you are in the ring, because you can grab the other person and throw them to the corner, and then start pounding on them there. And there's actually, the controls aren't, there's not too much input, actually. It's actually pretty simple. You've got the weak punches, and then you hold down a button to change the sort of punch, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, it's similar to Wii Boxing, although not as spastic. Basically, what they said was they want to discourage players from just randomly shaking the remotes as violently as possible. Basically, if you do that, you're going to lose. Because the game is more strategic than that. There are a lot of counterattacks and high-low kind of stuff. You have to block sometimes. So the game is designed so that if you just spam the waggle, you will lose. And so it I got that it didn't take me very long to realize that, and I started to slow down, think about what I was doing.
Start making the other person's combo and getting
right.
the block.
You start to look for gaps in the end. I mean, I did start to play it like Street Fighter because I was watching the other character and watching their animations and trying to find a place where I could get in between hits in the combo and break it up and do something else. So I think the graphics have a long way to go. This was an early build, and it's still several months away, so I don't want to criticize it too much for that, but it really didn't look very good at this.
It felt good, though.
It did feel good, yeah. The controls were surprisingly good, and the guy developing it, he came from the other Facebreaker team, and now he's working exclusively on the Wii version. That guy was super enthusiastic about it. He basically said everything that Nintendo fans would want to hear about the way they're developing this. It's ground up for the Wii. There are a lot of differences in the Wii version, that actually things that they're adding to it that aren't in the next... I keep saying next-gen version, it's just a convenient term. But basically, they were very concerned about players getting tired while they play it, as you can happen in the Wii box, and they're concerned about players just kind of, you know, just shaking things and not thinking about what they're doing. So I was pretty impressed with the philosophy behind it, and now we'll kind of have to see if the execution comes up to meet that. But it definitely has potential, definitely. So the next game on our list is Elebits 2. This is the I don't have the subtitle, but
I don't have the subtitle
Elebits
in my head.
Elebits 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah, Electric Boogaloo. Yeah,
well,
there you go.
This was another game where a screenshot came out and it split because the first Elebits was on Wii. So you see it on the DS and you're like, how does that play? What are they doing here? And it actually feels nice. It's actually like a little bit of a... It reminded me a little bit of Link to the Past, just in the puzzles that they had. It was this section where I had to go and I had to open water gates and that would flood areas. And I would be able to freeze certain portions of the water so that I could walk over them and make a bridge, basically. And the game actually, it doesn't have a lot of enemies. What it does have is a lot of puzzles and the gravity gun, or I don't know what it is called, but that's still in there. And you just use the stylus. You tap a rock, you tap a tree, and you shake it. And then when you tap these things, Elebits pop out, and then you have to tap them to make them stop. And then you tap your partner, which is called an Omega Elebit, and they'll go out and grab it for you. And I actually talked to the person at the booth, and they said that they've got 50 of those guys there. Each of these Omega Elebits that will partner with you, they have special abilities. One can freeze, one shoots out ice shots and can freeze water, one is fire, so you can burn down trees. And they're shooting for 64, and they said they are shooting for 20 levels. So actually, you know, it felt actually surprising. I almost think that Elebits is better on the DS than it is on the Wii.
Now, the Wii game was really heavily based on the physics engine. Well, I don't know if the gameplay was so much based on the physics engine, but it certainly
but the appeal,
had... Right, I mean, kind of, the part of it was to go into somebody's bedroom and tear it up, basically, and tear it to pieces. And how does that translate to the DS?
Well, I don't think it does. I think they still have the gravity gun, and you grab a rock, and you slide it around the screen, but it doesn't really feel like you're playing physics. It's more of a, you know, a typical adventure-type puzzle game.
Yeah.
Where you have, oh, these are rocks in my way, this is a tree I have to burn,
these
are water gates.
The environments that you saw in the demo were all outside.
Yeah, they were outside.
See, that's totally different. The
that
first
is
game
totally
is entirely
different.
Inside
right.
this house. And, I mean, I think you go out in the yard in one level, but I mean, it's pretty much inside.
Yeah, the idea is that the main character from the first game gets on, actually starts exploring this bus, and the bus wakes up and it drives him off to this other place, and it runs out of energy, so now he's running around collecting energy and also rounding up these Omega Elebits. And there was even, let me get this in, the boss fight. I actually got to the end of the level, and there was a boss fight, and it actually used the top screen. Usually the top screen is just a map, but here I had a little bit of a boss fight where the boss would be flying around the top screen, and I'd actually have to light fires and shoot something up at him. And then he'd come down, and he had about three phases, so I was actually pretty impressed.
Great. Well, the next game on our list is Tecmo Bowl Kickoff. This is for the DS, right?
Yep. Another DS game.
Well?
Oh, you want me to talk about it?
Yes, you played it.
Oh, yeah, I did.
And you're a huge fan of Tekken Ball,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I love the Tekken Ball game on the NES. It was one of the games I played. That and Play Action Football, I actually like them both, but Tekken Ball is the one that has this place in everybody's hearts. And the DS version, it's just kind of going back to that old school way of doing the football. It doesn't have any like NFL license or actual players. It's just like just generic teams and stuff like that. But
is it kind of the Fire Pro wrestling of football?
Yeah, actually, that'd be the perfect way to describe it. Because what happens is during games,
yeah, if you do like you hit a perfect pass, it's like a rocket pass. There's like a cutscene of a quarterback actually throwing the ball like really close and detailed. And if you're doing it, if you're a running back and you're doing a really good run, you do like a lightning cut or something like that, and you just see, you know, these both screens, these animations come up of, you know, tacklers missing the runner, and it just runs right by them. And so when that happens, it's like you snap the ball, you hand it off to a running back, and you're controlling the running back going up the middle, and then all of a sudden it cuts to that cutscene if you're doing something right, and then the animations happen. And then all of a sudden you're back on the field and you just pass by everybody. So it's for the demo purposes that happen all the time. It's not going to happen as much in an actual game, but it's kind of a cool little, I guess, campy way of showing football in that, you know, just these little dinky characters on the field. But when you actually see them in the cutscenes, like, you know, doing those moves, scoring a touchdown or, you know, kicking a field goal, those animations, even though you just see the little tiny player on the field, you see them like that, it makes you believe that, yes, these are big, hulking athletes playing football.
So did they tell you much about the online mode? Is it pretty straightforward?
No, they didn't really mention anything about it. It was just, here's the gameplay. Oh, that's cool. What about online? We're not talking about that now. Okay.
We heard that a lot at the show. It's nothing new. But, All right, so the next game on the list is SimCity Creator. Now, this was a game I didn't know anything about until I walked up to the demo and the guy was playing. I was like, oh, this is for Wii. A new SimCity? I think I had read the name on a list somewhere, but I hadn't seen screenshots or anything of it. I was actually really surprised by it. It's kind of was one of the standouts, probably the best EA game that I saw for Wii. And it's coming out in like 2 months, I think. In a lot of ways, it's very similar to the Super Nintendo SimCity, which is the only one I've played,
yeah. But
it's definitely one of the fan favorites, I think. A lot of people think it's one of the better versions of the original SimCity. And it seemed a lot like that. Of course, it has better graphics. Actually, it's pretty detailed graphics on the city and the people. And one of the cool things is you can zoom in and out of the city. So if you want to see more of it at once, you can zoom out. If you want to see a lot more detail, you can't go down to street level. It's not Google Earth or, you know, Google Streets or whatever. But you can get a lot closer than you would probably want for gameplay purposes. I mean, if you really want to zoom in and see what it looks like, you can do that. One of the cooler things is that, I mean, the game is built entirely from the ground up for the Wii, so it's not a crappy port of something else. And one of the cool things they've done is that, you know, basically the entire game is controlled with a pointer, like a mouse. And apparently it's the first SimCity game where you can do this, but instead of just laying out these grids of rows and things like that, it's a lot more analog. I mean, you still can build zones for buildings by the grid, but you can also take your pointer and draw roads on there. So you can do curvy roads, you can build designs and things like that. You can, you know, not just for creative purposes, but you can make curvy roads that connect other straight roads. And because of this, the developer guy said that a lot of people on their team had been spending a lot of time trying to recreate real cities, because now that you can draw curvy roads, you can actually pretty closely replicate real street layouts from cities. So, I mean, if you want to, you can, you know, make your hometown or make L.A. You can do the new True Crime Streets of L.A. in your SimCity game. So that was pretty interesting. They also have a lot of the, like, gestural controls to control the disasters, and I kind of remembered the disasters from the first game. I was like, why would you control them? Like, the disasters are something that you react to, not cause. You know, you're trying to build the city and make it big. And he said, well, there's like a couple of the missions in the game ask you to destroy a city. You know, so the game is basically mission-based, and it asks you to do all this stuff, you know, try to build a successful city in the swamp where you can't do certain kinds of wind power or stuff like that. Sometimes you have to make a big city, but make it a clean city so you can't use coal-burning stuff and things like that. So it's mission-based, and sometimes the missions will ask you to even, you know, give you a pre-built city and ask you to destroy it. Another cool thing is, you once you build your city, you can you can get an airplane. I think they actually have multiple kinds of airplanes. Hop in this thing, and it goes into the zoomed-in city of the view of the city, and you can fly your airplane around your city and look at it from that aspect. So it's kind of like these roller coaster games where you build a roller coaster and then you get to ride it in first person. It felt similar to that. It's not first person exactly, but you have this airplane, you're flying around the city, and you control it by moving the remote around, kind of like that demo a couple years ago at E3. So all in all, it was actually like there's a lot more to it than I was expecting. And if you're a fan of the old SimCity like I was on Super Nintendo, this seems like a pretty natural follow up to it. So yeah, I found it pretty interesting.
I glanced at you playing it for a little bit, and I was like, this does look like that old SNES SimCity.
I'm sure that's on purpose. You know, they know that that's the Nintendo market that remembers that. So I thought it looked pretty good.
Just based on what I saw. I'm interested in it enough to, maybe consider playing it down the road. I don't know about buying it outright, but definitely I'll try playing it just to see what it's like.
That's more than you can say for some of the games we saw this week. So next up is Sonic Unleashed, and unfortunately we didn't actually get to play this. They didn't have the Wii version at the show,
but
we saw
the 360
demo
version.
But I wish TYP was here to talk about it. He had lots of questions for them, and he's our Sonic expert, among other things, but I think we all felt pretty good about it. I mean, I was like, wow, this isn't totally shitty, you know?
Pretty good with a caveat.
Okay.
Because that caveat is, for whatever reason, Sonic Team is developing, the high-def versions, we'll call them. And for the Wii versions and the PS2 version too, right?
Right.
They're not exactly telling us who specifically is developing the game. All they're saying is, Sonic Team is leading the project. Dimps is helping with some of the daytime level design.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah. Dimps is working on both versions. They didn't actually show the Wii version. We can't really say what it looks like. I'm assuming the graphics will be good based on the last Wii game in the Sonic franchise, so I'm not worried about the graphics. I do have to wonder, why don't you just use the same levels in both versions? I understand using a different engine, which they are, a different code base. But why design completely different levels for the Wii version? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, because the game plays the same. I mean, the core gameplay is the same. Why are there different levels?
I mean, I mentioned to you earlier that it might have something to do with the fact that how they lay out the levels, because they're going through the levels pretty fast, so you might need to load a level at a time. And that might not make a difference for whatever reason, just not high-res textures or whatever you can do on the Wii. But there just might be something about, the 360's got blast processing that we don't.
Oh, no. Yeah. Don't bring that back.
Just general comment on the 360 version. I'm one notch above cautiously optimistic. I guess you could call me hopefully
hopeful.
Optimistic.
Yeah, I am too, actually. I thought it looked good.
Yeah, because it started off as a regular Sonic game, behind the back perspective, but they did some things to ease it. Just make it better, prove it generally. It's like, if you want to switch lanes, they have a button on the shoulder button on the 360 controller, you just press that, and
right.
Sonic will just move over.
I mean, you can still use analog control to steer Sonic, say you're doing some rail grinding, and there's three rails. There was a lot of this in, Sonic Heroes for GameCube, which I reviewed and hated. But there's a lot of rail grinding where there are three parallel rails. You had to constantly jump back and forth between them. And in the previous games, you always had to jump up and then basically steer yourself with the analog stick over to another rail. And if you went a little too far or not quite far enough, you just fall in the abyss. So now you can just push a shoulder button, and Sonic will just automatically skip to the next rail. And you can even do this on the ground. If there's a line of rings over on the side, you just hit the button and he'll just shift over there. So it's kind of adds this digital element, very kind of old school element to it.
And it's especially then the camera, it doesn't just stay behind his back. There was times when it just literally went to a side scroll view.
Right, it looked like a 2D
game.
Just
really like
pretty
old
graphics.
Sonic games.
Did you notice those switches?
No, it felt
I ended
very
up
natural.
Looking at it and saying, when did this turn into a 2D game?
Right, it felt very natural.
And it was still
and
beautiful
and 3D. And I have to admit, even me being a Nintendo fanboy back in the day, that I still secretly thought Sonic was cool.
It comes out.
And just in that demo, Sonic kind of looked cool again.
Yeah, I mean,
except when he was Sonic the Werehog.
Yeah, so we should explain briefly the structure of this game is that it's divided into daytime levels and nighttime levels. And 50% of the game is daytime, and that's when you're playing as Sonic, you're running through the level really fast, and you're doing this platforming. Those are the levels that Demps helped design. And Demps are the team that made the Sonic Advance games and Sonic Rush as well.
I don't think Demps is... Oh, for the Wii version, yes, you're right.
But for both versions... Yeah, for both versions, they're working on the daytime Sonic levels.
Oh, okay.
So then at nighttime, which is the other half of the game, and they alternate daytime, nighttime, but at nighttime, Sonic turns into Were-Hedgehog.
Were-Hog.
Yeah, the Were-Hog, and he loses his speed. He basically just looks beefier and darker color.
Yeah, he has kind of like stretchy arms.
Well, they look like Popeye arms.
But generally, it's like a beat-em-up hack-and-slash kind
right,
of deal.
Right, that's where the combat of the game lies, and I can't see why anyone would be super interested in that. Like, why do people want combat in Sonic games?
Yeah,
I don't understand.
Yeah,
at least they took it out of their racing game. They made it its own.
Right, it's kind of separate, so that's going to solve a lot of problems.
It's good it's separated, but I just wonder, like, the first time they might get the actual Sonic running going fast part, you know, right, they kind of screw it up with this weird kill people.
I just think it's sad that they're sort of diluting the part of the game that everyone wants, but at least 50% of the game is the fast, speedy part, rather than 20% of the game.
It's going to get at least a 5 out of
10. Yeah.
Good base to work
from. Yeah, I mean, definitely, as TYP and I discussed yesterday, at least 2 characters is better than 10, which they've had in the recent Sonic games.
Well, actually, they said there was one other character, but that's only 1% of the game.
Right, it's basically a minigame. It's probably Knuckles or something like that, but it's basically like a minigame. It's not a significant portion of the gameplay. So it's basically Sonic and Were-Sonic. And Were-Sonic does look less interesting, but it didn't look bad. It's just like, this looks really generic. It looks like a lot of other games. Why do you feel the need to put this in there? Overall, I think we were all pretty impressed by it, kind of optimistic about how it might turn out. I'd like to see the Wii version now and see how it compares and see if it's, you know, I want to make sure that's
good.
Not the redheaded stepchild version.
Yeah.
I would hope they put a lot of effort in the Wii version because, honestly, the Sonic fan base is on the Wii.
I don't want to see Waggle controls.
I forget, do we like Sonic Team?
I don't think Sonic Team has made a great game in 10 years. They've made a couple of good ones. I mean, Knights on Wii is a good game. It still has a lot of polish problems, but let's not get into that debate right now. It could go on forever. We could have a whole episode about Sonic Team, and I wouldn't want to do it without TYP. So Kai and I spent a fair bit of time up in the Square Enix booth, and we got to play there. Really, the main games they were showing were all for DS. They had, and they were all remakes. There was Final Fantasy IV, which we didn't really bother playing because it comes out in like 3 days.
Yeah.
So we're all gonna be able to talk about that next week, hopefully. But they did have Chrono Trigger for the DS, and they had Dragon Quest IV for the DS. You want to talk about Dragon Quest a little?
Well, Dragon Quest, I never actually got to play it before. Well, it never came out here before
until
the PlayStation, right?
No, I played the NES version. It was very rare. They made very few copies. It's extremely valuable now, at least for the next couple months.
So this was my first time playing it, and I must say I got right into it. It's really this old-school RPG. You can have a bunch of characters, but you can only have 4 on your party at once. And unlike, you know, the Final Fantasy games or other games where it's where they vary the order in which you attack in battle, this one it's all your character's attacks and then it's the enemy's attacks.
Right. It's so, very very structured battle. Mm-hmm. It's very predictable about when things are going to happen.
Yes.
The great thing about the Dragon Quest series, and some people would say the worst thing about it, is that it doesn't change that much from game to game. The story changes a lot, and that's really the most important thing. The stories are always interesting, but the gameplay doesn't change very much. And so what that means is that if you haven't played Dragon Quest since Dragon Quest 1 and you got it free with Nintendo Power back in the 80s, you're still going to be able to play this Dragon Quest IV remake for DS. If you never played a Dragon Quest game until Dragon Quest 8 on PlayStation a couple years ago, you're not going to have any problem going back to this one either. It's really not that much different from the first
or the last
in the series.
You're right, but isn't Dragon Quest IV also famous for having these chapters and having each chapter distinct characters?
The structure is different, but the gameplay is really the same. Even the presentation is pretty much the same. But yeah, the structure of the game is that it's broken up in these chapters. Each chapter is a few hours long, except the last one, which is about 40% of the games. The last chapter is like 20 hours long. But The idea is that you get introduced to, you play as different characters in every chapter, and then the last chapter they all come back together and form this giant party of people. You have like 15 characters you can choose from for the last, you know, the last chunk of the game.
Well, speaking of presentation, I know you went up and you asked, how did they do this? Is this actually better than the PS1 remake?
Right, so the game did come out for the PS1, although I'm pretty sure that was only in Japan.
Okay.
And so did 5 and 6, and those are coming to PS as well, and they're pretty much confirmed for North America. So eventually we're going to get 5 and 6, and those have never been released in America. So that's pretty exciting. 4 was released, but most Americans have not played it, even Dragon Quest fans. So this one's coming out this year, and yeah, it's pretty much remade. It's sort of loosely based on the PS1 version, but it's considerably better, I think. You actually have a 3D graphics engine for the environments that stretches across both screens, which is kind of strange. Like, you can rotate it anytime you want to, and it rotates on both screens, so, like, it feels like a really big view of the area.
The characters are still sprites, though, right?
Right. His characters are sprites, but the environments are 3D, and they look really good. It's not like the Final Fantasy IV engine. It has a different feel to it. It's more cartoony. It's more colorful.
I think they actually retained. I jumped right in, and I thought I didn't worry about the fact that the characters were sprites and the environment was
beautiful. No, it doesn't.
Nice.
It doesn't clash at all. It works very well. So I'm really excited about that. Mm-hmm. It's probably my favorite Dragon Quest game. And I haven't played it in a really long time, so I'm looking forward to getting back into it. It looks like a really nice version. And it's made specifically for the DS, so it has a lot of nice DS features. It feels a little more modern in the presentation. And that contradicts, or that offsets a little bit, Chrono Trigger, which is a very straight port. Not that I'm really complaining, because Chrono Trigger is almost a perfect game, in my opinion. I mean, if, I don't want to say perfect, there's just not really anything I would change. Let me put it that way.
Well, there are some games, well, Square likes to actually, you know, revamp the entire thing, and I think it's really good that he didn't do that.
It's kind of refreshing that they're just it's basically slapping it on a cartridge and giving it to you, because mm-hmm. for $30, $40 probably, but...
Square tax.
Yep. Yeah, there's just Square
tax. I mean, that's why they said, well, they're going to do anything on Virtual Console. We can just resell full games at full price.
And they're correct.
Yeah.
I would rather pay $8 for Chrono Trigger, but I honestly will pay $40 for it, too. Because Chrono Trigger is my favorite game of all time. And I was pretty excited to play this demo. It was set in the part right after the trial when you're sentenced to be executed and you break out of the prison and you fight the dragon robot tank on the bridge. And I actually had a hard time. I actually died trying to beat that boss. I couldn't remember exactly how to do it. But the graphics look really nice. I mean, they haven't changed them, but because it's on a smaller screen, it's kind of a little more compressed. The pixels are closer together. It actually looks pretty sharp and colors very bright. They've done a nice job with the touchscreen. The touchscreen is basically like a menu down there. The original graphics are shown on the top screen, which is the opposite. DQ4, the game is played on the touchscreen, and mm-hmm. the top screen is mostly menus, except when you're in a town, and it shows the 3D. It's just an extension of the 3D engine. But with Chrono Trigger, the touchscreen is basically stuff like menus, and the nice thing about that is it's a little more convenient than pausing and navigating a menu system. You have a little better access to some of the features. And all these menus, like the new touchscreen interface, looks exactly like the menu system from the top screen. So it's really nice, a continuous kind of style to it. I talked to the guy. I think the FMV from the PlayStation version has been compressed into this. I believe so. I don't have confirmation on that, but I believe that's a guy. I mean, there wasn't that much anyway. It wasn't like hours upon hours of CG. It was like a few minutes of stuff that they did. And also, he mentioned that in the PS1 version on Final Fantasy Chronicles, I think it was. I didn't really play that one because the load times were really bad, and I just couldn't bear it. So I kind of skipped over that re-release of it. But he said that they added an extra dungeon at the end of the game. And the DS version is going to have that plus another extra dungeon somewhere in there. So there's a fair bit of added content, especially if you didn't play the PlayStation version. That stuff's optional, but it'd be nice, you know, it'd be nice. So there's actually tons of optional stuff already.
So they didn't just slap it into the DS, did they?
No, they're doing some things. I mean, they're certainly not overhauling the graphics, you know, or anything like that. But they are adding a few things. I would liken it to the releases of the Final Fantasy games for GBA, where they, you know, like Final Fantasy IV for GBA. Uh-huh. It looks exactly the same as the Super Nintendo version, but they added a little extra content. There's a bestiary, and there's an extra dungeon. It's basically like that.
Okay.
So, you know, who cares? It's an amazing game, and if you've never played it, dear God, I mean, if you put this on your Christmas list, cannot miss Chrono Trigger. You absolutely, every single person on the face of the earth should play this game, in my opinion. We should be like dropping shipments of it over starved countries in Africa.
Well, bundle it in with Kirby Superstar Ultra.
Yeah.
The other game everybody in the
world other game should everybody should play. Yeah, that's one I have to catch up on, so I'm looking forward to that. Over at THQ's booth, we saw Deadly Creatures, and I got to play it very briefly. Mostly we watched the guy play it. What do you guys want to say about that?
It's an interesting concept for a video game.
It is. I can't think of anything like it.
I think that's a good thing.
If you're not familiar with it, it's a Wii game, and basically you play as literally a real spider or a real scorpion, and you just go around and you hunt other bugs for energy, and sometimes you cross paths with the other, if you're the spider, you cross paths with the scorpion, you kind of fight each other. The spider can walk up walls, and the camera will actually stay behind the spider as he walks up walls, and even the ceilings, they said.
Yeah, the camera's totally automatic, and to be able to pull that off with walking on the walls and the ceiling
that's
impressive. I mean, you don't see many, that's why Spider-Man used to be like, they used to always say Spider-Man games suck because nobody could get the camera right, and finally they started to get better about that, but...
Yeah, and what just makes it bizarre is that that by itself doesn't really make a video game, but then Rainbow is developing it, I think.
Yeah.
They're intertwining this story with humans that is told from like this perspective of the insects and the arachnids.
They likened it to what? Coen Brothers Mystery?
Right, which I think they're setting their sights pretty high there, but basically there's some kind of crime going on in the desert, and you as the insect are, like kind of eavesdrop on some of those conversations, but it's always done from the insect's point of view, which is pretty interesting. Like, we saw that basically there was like a hole in the ceiling, the humans were walking by talking, so you caught like snippets of their conversation, but it was all from ground level, micro scale with the insects.
So, but, yeah, I mean, it's just kind of weird but that's not the main, unless later on, the bugs cross paths with the humans, which I imagine it will. Otherwise, why even have that kind of story?
Yeah.
So it's a unique game. It remains to be seen how that concept can actually hold up.
Well, part of the thing that was disappointing about it was because both of the levels were underground, so you saw a lot of ground dirt. And they say later on you'll be climbing up sides of trucks, and you'll be
You'll be more in the human world, the macro scale,
and those levels kind of will be interesting. I hope they'll be interesting.
Yeah, I wanted to see some of that, and unfortunately, we didn't get to in the demo. Is a lot of underground.
Yeah, it was just basically like the first two areas.
So I'm looking forward to seeing more of it. And actually, the other thing I wanted to note, and we could say this about De Blob too, which is the other Wii exclusive game at THQ, but considering that it was conceived as a Wii game from the beginning, and it is exclusive to the Wii, it's surprising that the game does not have a whole lot of motion controls. They're used sparingly for special attacks. There's no there's no like crazy gestures. There's no IR pointing. It doesn't look like a game made exclusively. In other words, it doesn't play like a game made exclusively for the Wii because it's not gimmicky.
Well, think about it. Isn't that Mario Galaxy?
Right, that's what we would want. Yeah. I'm just saying it's surprising that I'm surprised that they're not shouting it from the rooftops. This was something we observed when we talked to them about it, but it wasn't something they were advertising. You know, they weren't like, this is the Wii game that's not cheesy, but that's something we observed. And I was like, I was playing it and I just realized, I'm not waving my arms all over the place like an idiot. Like, I'm just playing this like a normal game, and occasionally I make a motion, and I don't mind because it's not constant.
Those are what Wii games should be.
Like, right, exactly.
Like The Godfather comes to mind.
Sure.
You don't always need to point at the screen. Any game where you have to point at the screen a lot of the time is actually really restricted in that sense.
It can be kind of exhausting. if you have to do too much. I mean, for like Corruption, I had to take breaks sometimes because you do have to point at the screen constantly while you play that game. There's really no pointing at all. I think my problem with Deadly Creatures, and hopefully this can be tuned up because the game has a little ways to go, but like they showed us the intro screen, like the menu, and you have this like iguana or lizard in the background. It looks really, really good. Now, at first, my first impression was like, holy shit, this game has amazing graphics. And they started the game, the actual game doesn't look nearly that good.
Yeah.
The creatures, the scorpion and the spider and the enemies all look really good. The environments don't. Like, there's a lot of nasty textures. There was, like, some cactus stuff in the desert part that looked really bad, like, really grainy and just awful.
Yes, but just still, they might clean
that
up.
Yeah, I hope they're going to tighten all that up. But it looks still in development. I think the graphical quality is very inconsistent right now. There's kind of a disconnect between the way the characters look and the way the levels look.
Yeah, and again, maybe
they can fix that.
But, you know, then again, why would you spend so much time on the menus when the game isn't done yet?
Yeah, it's odd.
Well, didn't they say the menu was actually a pre-rendered video?
Right, anyways. They said it was pre-rendered. They were showing it off, though. They were, like, really proud of it. And at first I was like, well, I would be proud of this, too. And I saw what the game really looks like. It was like, oh. But, graphics notwithstanding, I think it's a very interesting game. It's really not like anything I've ever seen before, so it could be very cool.
Could be cool, yeah.
Oh, and the other thing I wanted to mention is that the game's not gamey at all.
No.
Like, you go around, there are things that you collect, there are enemies, but there's no HUD, really. There aren't, like, flashing coins all over the place. Like, all the video game elements of an action game they're all represented in the world of the insects, you know? Like, so when you pick things up, you're actually picking up larvae that can't defend themselves.
Bugs, stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. So, there's nothing that really sticks out and takes you out of the experience. I can see this, you know, if you're playing this for hours and hours, I can see it becoming very immersive because there's nothing that really takes you out of the experience that looks like it's really out of place.
It's still just a strange concept.
It is, but I think it's very cool.
It's very cool, but it's different. No, not like, you know, Wii is different than PS3 or 360.
It's just different from everything.
Which
I
think is great. It really should happen on every platform. Games like this should happen no matter what.
I think this game is probably going to get ported to other platforms simply because there's no reason it can't be. There's no reason not to, really.
Yeah, there's not much in the way of.
Well, what I mean was they should come out. Developers should feel free to come out with different concepts like this.
Exactly.
And we shouldn't need a Wii.
This is like the kind of crazy thing that WiiWare was created for. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's not WiiWare. It's definitely
real Wii disc game. That's what the Wii was created for.
Yeah.
And then a subset of that, if you want to go even crazier, there's WiiWare.
Right. Yeah. So, anyway, Deadly Creatures, very interesting game. Next on the list, another remake, Samba de Amigo, for the Wii. This is from Sega, being developed by Gearbox. And Kai, you have a pretty interesting perspective on this one.
Well, I don't know how it happened, but I remember playing this at the Nintendo Media Summit.
Yeah, the Media Summit a couple of months ago.
And I enjoyed it then. And then I played it here, and for some reason, I didn't have the same experience. I'd heard that the controls had improved, but I was having more trouble yesterday than I remember having. And I'm sort of confused and a little bit disappointed because I remember, well, the maracas work by the level that you hold them at. So if
you mean the Wii remotes, they're not real maracas.
No, the Wii remotes.
Pretend maracas, but
the Wii remotes. So if you've got them tilted up, they're supposed to be up. If you've got them tilted down towards the floor, they're supposed to be down. And if they're level, they're sideways. But for some reason, the game is still a little late in detecting that. And with a music rhythm game, you know, you have to get up to that position fast enough to hit the beat that's coming.
Right.
And the game is always just a tiny little step behind you.
It does seem like there's a lot of lag in the controls.
In detecting the orientation so that when you do shake it, it knows this is where you are.
I think there's also an issue of when you shake the controllers, you're actually changing the orientation of them as you shake them. And sometimes the game gets confused about where you really what direction you really want to shake it at because of that. I thought the game really controlled quite poorly. I mean, I was playing it more like the Dreamcast game, and you would think, because it's such a niche game, I think it could have mainstream appeal, but certainly this is a beloved game from 8 or 9 years ago, and these Dreamcast fans are going to want to pick this up, and I think they're going to be very distraught when they first play, because the controls, I mean, the game looks exactly like the Dreamcast game, and yet the controls work completely differently. And my biggest problem is the way the game controls really doesn't match what appears on the screen.
Yeah, and it's just like, especially if you play the Dreamcast version, if you're familiar, you know, the Baraka controllers, they just work by, I think it was just elevation.
Right, it's like a sound pickup device in the bar on the ground.
And obviously, you know, the tremor of the maracas also kind of helped love the game, but just the fact that, like you guys said, sometimes it's natural, if you're pointing the maracas in the air, you're kind of naturally going to point the remote up anyway. So, to that effect, it's probably the best that we could do with the current technology. Now, obviously, after they announced the Wii Motion Plus, this is going to be one of those games where it absolutely should have been, you know, in the pipeline for Samba de Amigo.
I really wish they would delay this, yeah, like 6 months and use the Motion Plus, because I don't think it works well enough without it. And I think it would work perfectly with it.
It would work,
yeah,
absolutely perfectly with
this
the
is
Motion
going to
Plus.
Be, it's just sad timing.
It just does, it's just, the current Wii technology is not capable of doing this game justice. I really don't think they figured out a way to do it, and I just wish they would push it back 6 or 9 months and do it the right way, and it would be so great. And they're not going to. They did announce there's going to be DLC. I think they announced this a few days ago. There's going to be one track pack at least, a few more coming, but they're not saying right now what the pricing is going to be or what schedule. And they said the schedule really depends on how well the game sells, how well the track pack sells. But if you buy the game and you love it, that's pretty cool that you'll have DLC. Now, we're still waiting for some details on whether you can save that stuff and load it off the SD card or how exactly that works. But, you know, DLC is good. It's promising to see that on the Wii, but I think the core gameplay, the way the game controls, is very problematic right now.
Yeah, I mean, if you're really, really careful about it, it would work, but in music games, especially in the harder difficulty levels, when you don't have time to be careful about it, it's not very good.
Yeah, I mean, the really unfortunate thing is that the interface and the way they depict what you're doing on the screen is exactly the same as the Dreamcast game, but it doesn't match up. It no longer matches up with the way you actually control the game, and it's very confusing. There's a huge disconnect between what you're doing and what the game actually registers. And this is not, I mean, this game has a lot of casual appeal, but it's not necessarily easy.
No, it's not.
And without that accuracy, it's going to be really hard to play it. I mean, you're not going to get a good score on this game.
More than anything, it's confusing. Like,
it is.
You know you're doing it, and even when you think you're doing it right, the game's a little finicky about, you know, it has to.
Much like the karaoke parts in Rock Band. That's another
brand. Yeah, but the reason why the controls in Samba are so finicky is because there's just that little bit of a lag for the Wii to see, okay, which way you're holding the remote, because of the accelerometer. It has to say, like, it's basically the only acceleration is gravity.
Yeah,
so it doesn't know which way
is
down.
I guess that's the way they're doing it. I don't know.
Yeah, as far as I know, with how the controller tech works, it's not instant.
Yeah.
Because any little motion could be.
Right.
So they have to, like, confirm it, like, compare samples.
This game needs Motion Plus bad, and it's not going
to
get it.
I'm just so confused as to why I liked it at the Media Summit, not now.
Yeah.
It just might be because you had time to think about it. The purple Kool-Aid. Oh, that tasted nice.
Yeah.
Well, that's enough. That's enough digging on Samba. I mean, it holds a lot of potential, but I'm afraid they're not going to get the controls down before it ships. It's coming out, like, next month, I think, or something like that.
Yeah, Sega, if you're listening, seriously, consider delaying it.
Please, delay it.
Or, if anything, wrangle some information out of Nintendo and try to leave the door open for some sort of update down the road.
Yeah, that would be great if they could put leave in the hooks for the Motion Plus, even though the hardware isn't out yet, or if they were able to patch it later. I mean, that would be excellent, because I wouldn't buy it.
Patching Nintendo games.
Yeah, in this case, I think it would be justified. Well, the last game we want to talk about in this part of the show is from Kai,
and
you're
going
to have to recite the title for this, because I don't...
Okay, it's Major Miner's Majestic March. There you go.
Major Miner's Majestic March.
And what is the context of this? I mean, why should anybody care about
well, this
crazy
is...
Game?
Well, if you've ever played a Parappa game, this is the composer and this is the artist who made Parappa, basically.
Parappa the Rapper.
Yeah. And this game is... Majesco's publishing it, And of course, well, it's not rapping. So it's to begin with, it's not rapping, and it doesn't have that hip hop feel. It's a band. It's a marching band thing. So you've got sousaphones and sousa microphones and everything.
Tubas
and everything, and it's very colorful, very much in Parappa's style, but also 3D this time. And you're marching down a path. And to play this game, you actually keep the tempo, the beat, with your arm. You thrust the Wii remote up, you thrust it down, and you keep doing that.
Like, so you're like the drum major.
You're the conductor at the front of the marching band.
Drum major.
Okay. Yeah. And basically, you walk around this path, and you can set it fast. The faster you do it, the faster the music plays, and the slower you do it, the slower it is. But there's an optimal speed at which everyone in your band is happy. And you want to keep it like that. But to vary that up, as you're marching, you try to build up a bigger band and get a bigger score. You have to jerk the Wii remote right, you jerk it left, and you have to do that without losing your tempo. And you have to jerk it right to pick up new band members, jerk it to pick up items and stuff.
So you're essentially kind of doing a little conducting.
It sounds similar to Wii Music, the conductor mode that we saw 2 years ago. It wasn't
but
shown
it's
at this
actual
show.
Game.
Yeah, I mean,
this actually has a lot to keep track of. I was messing up badly, and I was actually losing the tempo and trying to get it back. And they actually have a mechanic where you collect jelly beans throughout the game, and then you hold down A, the game will actually pick up the tempo, and you don't have to worry about it for a little bit, so that you can concentrate on picking up items left or right.
There's like a temporary autopilot that
you can go on to. But it was actually a lot to keep track of. Maybe it was just the E3 environment. And it was actually also very exhausting because throughout this entire song, you're thrusting your hand up and down and up and down, and then left and right and left and right. And I was pushed. So you guys yesterday said that how could we have felt tired after the sword fighting? It's Major Minor's Majestic March, it's Samba de Amigo, and yes, also Wii Sports
Resort.
We're
playing a lot of Wii games all day, and a lot of these games are pretty physical.
The 5 hours of sleep a night doesn't help you.
No, it doesn't. But, I mean, just really quick note, I finally got to play Wii Sports Resort today, and I did the sword fighting, and my arm was on fire after one duel of that game. It is really, really exhausting, and it's kind of designed to be that way. And then I also this morning played Sean Wise Snowboarding on the balance board, and I can definitely see how that would get pretty tiring too after a few minutes. And the guy who demoed it said that he did the demos himself the entire first day of the show, and the next day he couldn't walk. Now, that's from playing it for 7 or 8 hours with a lunch break, so obviously that's unusual levels of usage, but a lot of these Wii games really are pretty taxing if you play them for any length of time. And in the case of, you know, the Wii Motion Plus, I would say not even that long.
Is Iga justified in saying no one... I don't
know.
That.
I got tired of Judgment too, but for different reasons.
Okay.
We might talk about that right now. The next segment of the show actually is our E3 Hall of Shame, and we don't want to spend too long on this, but just to mention a few games that we were really disappointed by or we just thought looked totally crappy here.
What's at the top of that list?
At the top of the list is Wii Music, and I don't know anyone here who liked it, who played it. I honestly, all these Wii games always say, don't criticize it until you play it. You know, you have to play it before you understand it. And everybody I talked to who played Wii Music thought it was stupid and not fun.
Yeah, there's no point to it, really. Yeah, you do stuff in it, and that's it. So.
Even as a toy, as just a goof-around toy, I don't think it's very much fun.
And actually, I'm thinking further about it. You have to know these songs. They give you the four beats of the measure, but they don't tell you how the song is really supposed to be played. You have to.
They don't tell you which beats are supposed to be played.
Yeah, they don't tell you if there's eighth notes, 16th notes. They don't tell you any of that. So if you just certain songs, you just hit every beat, it won't sound like a song.
Yeah.
So you really have to know the song beforehand, and the game has no way of telling you that. So it isn't even a teaching tool, from what I can see.
Well, there is that one that wasn't playable at the show, but they said like the drum kit where you could use the balance board as the kick pedals. Technically, yeah. I mean, that's kind of cool.
It has like lessons, and like Miyamoto thinks it can actually teach you to play.
Yeah,
the drums.
But the problem is that it's really confusing because it uses basically all the buttons on the Wii remote on top of the motion controls. So like to hit the toms, you have to hit like the D-pad buttons, like you know left, down, and right, as you're doing the motion, the remote motions.
It works exactly the same as it did 2 years ago when I first saw this, and back then I thought it was terrible, and I still think it's terrible. It looks cooler now because you have the balance board, and it looks like you're kind of doing something.
And like the guy who did it on stage, you know, he was doing a pretty good job of it, and it looked, you know,
because
somewhat impressive.
He was a real drummer, so he was intuitively getting what it was.
It's just that.
Well, he was acting it out. He was pantomiming it.
He's practiced it a lot.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's that interesting. All you're doing is waving your arms up and down, and you are controlling which drums you hit, but you're doing it not by which way.
You're doing the same motion up and down every single time.
Right. The way you control the drums is by holding the buttons, and that does not feel intuitive. It doesn't make sense within the physicality of the game, and it's not really fun. And I spent less than 60 seconds on that, and I got right back up. And the guy was like, "Had enough?" And I was like, "Yep." I got bored with it immediately. There's nothing to it.
Yeah, you just hit things. You don't need a game. You don't need perhaps a $50 game to do that.
Seriously, yeah. You pull out a pot and pan, and you're gonna have. It's gonna make more sense than this drum simulator.
Buy a Casio keyboard. It'll actually do your stuff.
I really think if you're thinking about getting this for your kid this Christmas, you'd be much better off just giving them a cheap Casio keyboard.
And they'll actually learn how to play music.
Well, they might, if they want to. I mean, there's the potential for it.
Music is their thing, you can do way better than music. Like Guitar Hero or Rock Band or, well, not the next one.
There is something charming about Wii Music as an idea. But then you actually play it, and it's just not that entertaining. You just feel stupid.
I think it's an idea. Me and Mr. Remo thought, this is an idea. I have to make a game out of this. I have to make a game out of this. I think
he needs somebody to tell him no when it comes to this. I mean, seriously, I can't see. I think this is a game for like 3-year-olds, and 3-year-olds are going to love this. You know,
until they turn like 5.
Seriously, when they turn 5, they'll be like, "How did I like this so much when I was 3?" Because there's just, it really is that simple. It's just so simple that it's not even fun anymore.
I'm really interested into when they start doing focus tests on this. I mean, even in Japan, you know, I really hope that they see that this is really a strange thing for them to put out, and that'll basically be their electroplankton.
Yeah, we asked Charlie Shibata about it today, and I'm not even sure he knows what electroplankton is, because he wasn't with Nintendo back then, and it wasn't a well-known game. But he kind of shrugged off that comparison. But I really do think it is like electroplankton.
I think it's a good comparison.
Where, I don't know, electroplankton actually has more depth than this. Yeah, but it's the same idea.
Electroplankton stuff instead of just the waggle, waggle, waggle.
Yeah. So anyway, none of us like Wii Music.
Was there anybody who said,
I had maybe a 5 or 10 second part of a Mario song where it clicked. And then everything else. And then after that, it was gone again.
Yeah. I don't know. I just don't give me music. So we'll get off the hate train on that one and jump on the Rock Revolution hate train. Speaking of music games, this really was the show of music games. They were everywhere. But Konami's Rock Revolution is pathetic. It just made me sad. I just literally felt bad for the producer. I realized she was standing right there demoing it. I honestly felt embarrassed for her. It's that bad.
The only, I mean, it's explicit. It's basically a standalone game where you can purchase an optional drum set. It's like a 7-pad or 6-pad plus a kick pedal drum set. So, I mean, if anything, it's got one of the best drum sets out there.
I think the drum set's way too complicated. I think there's way too much going on.
Not really. I picked it up pretty quickly.
I think the pads are too small and they're too close together.
That, I can agree with you.
Yeah, if you're going to have 7 pads, you have to have like the Ion $300 thing that Rock Band 2 showed. Where they're more spaced out, it's more like a real drum kit. But this thing is really compact.
But basically, all Rock Revolution is I guess it's an add-on for any, you know, Rock Band or Guitar Hero you have a peripheral already. The only problem is all the songs except one are covers.
Yeah, there's about 40 songs, which is half of what Guitar Hero and Rock Band have this year. And they're all cover songs, except the one Linkin Park master track,
that,
Shoot Me in the Face,
and
Please.
On top of that, some of the music, tracks I did spot, they're already in, like, Rock Band or Guitar Hero.
Right, they're actually cover songs of games that you've probably already got master tracks of in the other music games. And just to be clear, this, you wouldn't buy this game unless you already own these other music games, because it doesn't even come with a peripheral. In fact, they're for the Wii version, they're not even making the drum kit for Wii's. So you can play it with motion controls, which has got to be god-awful. I mean, I'm sure it's essentially the same as what Nintendo's got in Wii Music, which is bad. Or you can use your Guitar Hero guitar.
And actually, at the press conference, they were using a Guitar Hero guitar.
Right.
There was no hiding it. They didn't even attempt to.
They're not even releasing a Konami guitar for this.
You know, the game is not good.
If in a vacuum, I would think it was an interesting idea. Yeah. But there's so much competition in this, and this game doesn't even come close to the other ones. It's really
sad. You know what I'm
sad.
Thinking? I'm thinking Konami's, you know, they're suing MTV for Rock Band.
Yeah.
I was thinking, well, okay, if we're not going to make any money off the game, let's make some money off the lawsuit.
Well, obviously, that's what the legal department is thinking, and I kept thinking about that as I played it. I'm like, look, the people who are making this don't have anything to do with the lawsuit. They're just trying to make the game, but I really feel bad for them. This seems like a cash grab. It seems like trend chasing,
well,
it's too little too late.
Well, the sad story is that Konami started this, actually.
Yes, right?
and they just got left behind.
They did get left behind because their initial attempts at the music genre were really not that good. In terms of the drums and the guitar, they really weren't that good. And, yeah, and just... They should have just quit. They should have just quit. It's just sad that they're coming back in such a really sad way as they are. But this is not going to work. Castlevania Judgment... I say Hall of Shame because it's just kind of like, why does this exist? Like, it's not bad.
It's not really bad.
It's not good either, though.
It's pointless.
It just feels like, I just don't really know who's going to buy this, and it's not that good.
Like, the best way to explain this quickly is that what Soul Calibur Legends was to Soul Calibur, Castlevania Judgment was to the regular Castlevania. I mean, it's as if Konami said, hey, you know, Soul Calibur kind of copied us, we're going to copy their Soul Calibur, and it looks pretty much like Soul Calibur, just kind of a 3D running around action game instead of just, you know, traditional fighting.
Yeah, I mean, Iga keeps talking about this as a 3D action game and not a fighting game,
but the
non-fighting game parts where you, like, run around and hit candles with your whip are really minor at this point.
And the controls aren't that good.
No, the controls really aren't.
It's all waggle. 100% waggle.
Right.
It's
90% waggle.
There's a little bit of strategy to it, but mostly you're shaking the remote and...
Or shaking the remote with a button fast.
Yeah, I mean, the 3D effects as far as running around and the consistency of that is pretty bad, because we saw during the press conference, Ika himself was playing this game and he went over to a candle to show how you could hit the candle's environment. It took him 3 tries to hit the candle. He kept missing it. He was standing right next to it, but he wasn't facing the right direction. It's like, dude... This is why people worry whenever you announce a 3D game, because, like, this stuff, you guys really don't have a good handle on how to do 3D, and that, making this a fighting game doesn't change that, you know? So, yeah, Castlevania, I think there's some neat things. I think combining all the characters from the different games is a cool idea, but the fighting itself seems pretty shallow. It just doesn't seem all that great. So, on to Skate It, and I didn't see a lot of this. I saw it briefly. I played it for just a couple minutes before Miyamoto kicked me off of it. Almost literally, he was showing up for a demo, and they asked me to leave because Miyamoto wanted to play it. But I thought the controls were fine. It didn't feel quite as good as Shaun White Snowboarding from Ubisoft. Mainly, I put it on the Hall of Shame because the graphics really blow. I mean, they're really bad, and it's literally a barren environment. There are no other characters on the screen whatsoever, and still the environment looks like crap. So I think they need to do a lot of work polishing this game up, or it just looks pathetic. The controls were pretty hard to get used to on the balance board. You can play it without the balance board, and I didn't try that. But for me, this game just looks like so like PS1 right now. It needs a lot of work. Almost.
Wow.
Like, it's pretty bad. Yeah, it just very bare. So the last game on our Hall of Shame is King of Clubs. This is.
Why are you looking at me? I stayed away.
I know. I played this. It was Crave Entertainment's mini golf game, and this really did look like a PS1 game. I mean, the graphics were horrendous. The motion controls didn't make any sense whatsoever. I actually played
Carnival Games Mini Golf, which is the competing Wii Mini Golf game. Despite being associated with the infamous Carnival Games brand, it was way better than the Crave game. King of Clubs is really atrocious. So if you're in the market for a mini golf game this year, go with Carnival Games. It's a lot better. It's actually pretty good. To finish up the show, the last segment we were to talk about briefly was some of the stuff we saw on other platforms. We didn't necessarily get to play all of this. Some of it we just saw the demos at the press conferences. But just to give you an idea of what caught our eye outside of the Nintendo platforms, and the first one I have down here is Mirror's Edge.
Yeah, definitely Mirror's Edge. After the initial trailer, it looked interesting, but, you know, okay, what do I think of this game? But then they showed the new trailer at the EA press conference, and we actually got to play it. Kai, did you get to play it too?
No.
Okay, so I guess we're the only play, but it is really something new, something fresh. I mean, if anything, you know, on the high def systems, it's like it has color and, you know, regular light.
Right. It doesn't look like Unreal.
It doesn't look like, yeah. That in and of itself is refreshing, but just the gameplay. It's just you basically running around
on
doing these, you know, it's not just rooftops. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have these new levels they showed off on the trailer, but it's just a unique experience. It's like
a
first person adventure.
See, I think it's like last generation's Prince of Persia games in first person. You know, all the stuff of running on the walls, jumping, hanging on to things, swinging around, and stuff like that.
It's some combat, but it's mostly the puzzle platform.
I think the combat is pretty minimal in the game. Yeah, it's mostly about getting
really
from one place to another.
That really impressed me, actually, that you can go through the entire game without picking up, without firing a shot, and I thought that non-violent aspect, I almost thought that this, in the right hands, this could almost be marketed as a casual game, because I really think that people could pick it up and say, hey, I'm gonna, you know, I've got this non-violent story, and I'm gonna run through, I'm gonna, you know, I've got some place to be, and you just run.
I think the word I'm looking for is very believable.
Believable, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very immersive, and...
You know what I thought when I saw it? I was thinking Run, Lola, Run. I don't know if that's a good thing, but that was what popped
into
my head.
Yeah, I think that fits. I saw it a while ago, but I think that fits. Alright, well, next game on the list, Prince of Persia. Holy fucking shit. Like, we saw this, I did not get to play it. It was playable here, and unfortunately we didn't have time to check it out, to get our hands on it. But just seeing the demo at the Ubisoft press conference, my mind was blown. Like, my brains were on the floor. I think it looks ridiculous.
This game makes me question whether Nintendo has what it needs to make the next Zelda. I think that this game really brings that into question.
I think it's very sad that this game isn't on the Wii, and I don't think you could really do this game on the Wii and have the same appeal that it does.
Well, I'm happy at least that someone else is making a Zelda level game, Zelda quality game.
Yeah.
I think that's good news.
Absolutely. I think this is like this could be the next Okami as far as like a Zelda-ish game by a different company with a sort of skewed perspective on it and a totally different art style, and the structure of it's unpredictable. It's not the same old thing. I was stunned by it. Really,
there were some sections that made me think of Zelda specifically, like the combat was a duel. Was it just those two characters?
I thought of like Ocarina of Time against some Nostalphos.
Yes, or like Wind Waker.
Yeah, and they're saying they wanted all the enemy fights to be just like boss fights.
They're one on one. Yeah,
yeah. All the combat they said is going to be like completely individual against one. You know, really tough enemy. Like
right.
I said, they want all fights to be like boss fights.
Yeah, when you get in combat in this game, it's special.
Yeah,
it's not something to be brushed aside. It's not, you know, it's not just slamming on the buttons.
You gotta fight for it.
You have to actually pay attention. And the nice thing about that, it means that combat won't be like 50% of the game. It'll be a
special
event, basically.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the last trilogy of Prince of Persia games had too much combat, especially the one in the middle.
Yeah.
All three of them really had more than I would have liked. So I'm glad that they're kind of reducing that and doing something totally different with it. Street Fighter 4, Wendy, go crazy.
Oh,
this
man.
Is your deal, man.
It looks amazing.
You played it on arcade, right?
Yeah, I mean, they have the high-def arcade cabinet, you know, sit down. I got myself a nice 8-win winning streak going on. It's the real deal, dude. If you like Street Fighter at any time in the past, you know, you will love this game, period.
FinestKO.com. That's Wendy's fanboy fighting website.
Yeah, for Capcom vs. SNK2. I really stopped updating it.
It's still there?
It's still there, though. It's on my website. Yeah.
Just to prove how big of a fan he is.
But yeah, I mean, the new characters, I didn't really get to try them out because, you know, I was too busy winning with Ken. But it looks really good. It's really simple to pick up and play. If you just want to, you know, kick and punch each other, holy hell, you can do it.
Yeah.
If you want to get into the system, you know, if you're an intermediate player, you can do that. But after you spend some time with it, you can do, like, all the EX juggle combo moves, the cancels, and all that stuff. It's good.
Cool.
It's good.
Street Fighter 4. And then I played, actually a couple times, played Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts for the 360, and I actually blogged about this several weeks ago. I was just saying I was excited about it. I was really looking forward to, you know, this new direction they're taking. And after playing it, I'm still looking forward to it. I'm still really excited about it. The vehicles, that they were all pre-built. I didn't get in the vehicle editor, but just trying out all the pre-built levels that were scattered around the level, they felt quite different from one another. There's a lot of fun stuff to do. The game looks excellent, and the environment that I got to run around in was absolutely gigantic and really interesting. I actually found a helicopter vehicle and got to fly around it. It had a lot of verticality to it. It was extremely large. I mean, it took a couple minutes even to fly all the way across it. And there was just interesting stuff to do in all these nooks and crannies. And apparently there are several environments of that size in the game. So they were much bigger than, say, Banjo-Tooie environments, which are already pretty gigantic. So I'm really looking forward to it. You know, I don't fully understand the structure of the game yet, but I'm excited to play more of it. So that's Banjo-Kazooie. I thought our Nintendo fans might want a little report on that. That ends our show for today and for E3. So before we go, comments on the format of E3. I mean, I know, Kai, this is kind of your first E3.
I was at 2006, and so I know how crazy it can be.
You were one of them.
I was not one of them.
You were the problem.
That was my life savings, right?
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. Most of the people who used to be at E3 and shouldn't have been got in for free. You actually paid for your tickets.
Yes, see,
you kind of deserved it.
Oh, God. But if you squint,
we'll cut you some flack.
If you look at a booth, and you look at a corner of the booth, and you squint, and you block out the rest, it's still E3. It still has that craziness.
Right. A little bit. I mean, it started to finally get loud down on the show floor today when they turned up the volume on Rock Band 2. and that's when it finally hit me, like, whoa, I actually am at E3. I think I turned over to somebody and said, now it sounds like E3, because it got loud all of a sudden. But for the most part, it was a very quiet show, very functional. Like, I felt like we were actually getting around and playing games and getting work done, and we weren't really being impeded by
anything.
Tens of thousands of people.
Which is good. I know you guys came in and you were really disappointed. You guys sounded like really bummed.
Well, I think it's because it's in the old location. Mm-hmm. It's in the old location. Yeah. And so just for me, comparing you know, the sensationalism is definitely gone. Mm-hmm. It just looked kind of sad at first. But once I got involved in the event and was moving back and forth and actually getting to my appointments on time, and, you know, when I went down to the floor, I could play like 10 games in 30 minutes because there are no lines. It's easy to find all the companies, and it's just there, and you can play them, and then you can get back out and get to your next meeting.
The show floor is really small, though.
It was very small. It was
the perfect fit for the event.
Yeah.
I mean, if you, like, I can relate to this new E3 because last year in Santa Monica, you know, clusterfuck doesn't begin to describe it.
Right.
You know, I was running across town, driving into a farmer's market just to, you know, meet an appointment at a hotel half a mile away from where I was, let alone the actual, you know, event where they're showcasing all the games in one place was, like, you know, 5 miles away. I mean, what the hell? That's not an efficient way to do it.
I think this year was the perfect compromise because, again, like last year, they cut out all the fat, all the people and the stuff that didn't need to be at the show. But they went back to the central location where it's easy to get from one place to another. And so for me, I thought it was great. I wish we'd had more of our friends here from the site, you know, and I wish Nintendo had a much better presence. But as far as the format of the show, I was really pleased with it, and I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, and like we were joking that, you know, we were complaining how we had to walk from, you know,
from one meeting room to another.
Yeah, and like we were doing, like, the amount of walking we did all of E3. You know, it was probably half a day's worth of the old E3.
Right, yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And, you know, it never mind me running across half of Santa Monica.
Well, and not only does that help us physically, it helps us get more work done. It helps us play more games. It helps us get more done with fewer people, and that's what exactly what we had
and
to do this year.
That's what E3 was originally, and then it just the attendance just got out of control.
Right.
And all the EA had to do was, you know, just limit attendance, crack down attendance. Every year they said they were going to do it, and they didn't do it. Until finally they just overreacted and just clamped down so much that they just scattered it about Santa Monica.
Right.
But yeah, then they realized, well, okay, not a good idea.
They definitely addressed the problems of last year, and I think this year was very successful. So I hope that E3 doesn't die. Some people think this might be the last one ever, but
no.
I don't know if I'll ever get to go to another one, but for the industry's sake, I hope E3 comes back next year and they do it the same way they did it this year.
E3 is still a big deal. It's still relevant. Like, you know, like our local paper, you know, it was on the front page of, like, you know, the tech section, and CNN was covering it.
Oh, yeah, your parents were saying they were seeing it on TV, you know, and...
I mean, especially in Southern California, because it's a big deal, anything that big.
Right. Mm-hmm. Economically,
yeah, it's, you know, still it's a big not deal. Like, it's not like they're going to be talking about that California gift show that was in the other hall on local news, you see.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the video game industry is a big deal,
right.
And it's their big show is E3, so it's going to be a big deal, no matter what the format is.
With or without booth babes.
That's right. I don't miss the booth babes. They just get in the way.
There were some I thought babes, not necessarily booths.
Yeah, I mean, in the first couple years I came to E3, I thought the booth babes were great, and then I started to realize they were in my way when I'm trying to get to the next game. And
well,
so,
you know,
I love girls, but at E3, I just don't have time.
I have other priorities. Better a booth babe than a fat, tit-faced GameStop employee.
You know, that is... You should take that back. That's terrible. that's such an awful stereotype. So,
but it's true.
There's
a reason stereotypes.
I'm under protest. So that ends our show. Thanks everyone for listening. We hope you enjoyed this special series of E3 podcasts. We went through quite a lot of difficulty to bring them to you. So I really hope you've enjoyed them, and we'll check them all out.
Yeah, and check the site this weekend and all next week. We'll finally have time to get our impressions and all of our previews and our videos.
That's right. We've collectively done almost no writing this week. Just we've been so busy playing the games. The writing will come in the following.
I had to cover the entire Majesco booth by myself.
You wanted to.
You poor guy. that was actually your
voluntary assignment. Wanted to come down here.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's what E3 is all about. Sometimes you got to play games you don't want to play. So. Anyway,
I didn't say that.
We have a whole lot of writing left to do, and so please keep checking NintendoWorldReport.com for tons of hands-on impressions and previews coming throughout the next couple
interviews
weeks.
Interviews, too.
And interviews, that's
one.
Right. We interviewed Igarashi today, so.
And we talked to somebody at Nintendo and called it an interview.
It was a no-comment view.
No comments.
Anyway, that's the end of the show, so... regular RFN, I'm pretty sure we'll be back next week, and we'll have all kinds of analysis over the show from the usual crew, John, Greg, and James, and maybe even myself. So, with that, we depart, and we say, we hope you enjoyed E3 as much as we did.
Signing out from Los Angeles.
Forum drama start now.
Bye, everybody.